The E-12 Education Committee will come to order. And members, we're going to just start out with Senator Olson's bill first, which is the Senate File 846. And this actually is a in the policy committee. So we're actually functioning as two different committees, and we have to tape each one separately because when somebody wants to go and retrieve that, if they do, they'll understand where to look. So this is the Education Policy Committee, and we have Senator Jen Olson with Senate File 846. Welcome, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, Senate File 846, is labeled the homeschools mandate reduction. But reality is that it's equally a mandates reduction for superintendents and school districts. And in addition, there's a provision that actually can save the state money. So I'm happy to bring this before you. I do claim a bit of history to the original statute. In my first term here, the folks that were working with what to do if after the Supreme Court overturned our compulsory attendance law because it was unconstitutionally vague, there was efforts to clean that up and to provide for the issue that had brought it to the courts in the first place was whether parents were allowed to educate their children at home. And so the efforts of a lot of people ended up with a bill that I carried the first year. It ended up being in a study that included all the provisions of that bill, and the following year it was passed into law and has essentially has stood the test of time. It was I was kind of an anomaly in dealing with this bill because, number one, I was a public school teacher, and second, not a parent. And so it has been a very, very interesting for me. I have, not that I don't value the importance of parents and families, because I think we all know that parents are and parent involvement is critical to the growth and development and the educational support of their children. And to me, as I got acquainted with folks who were interested in educating their children at home, to me this was a very, very ultimate commitment to make, to be able to be willing and able to take on this this challenge. And it has been, over the years, I think it has been a very rewarding endeavor to have felt a part of. And I don't know if there's any of you that don't know somebody that is homeschooling their children or have met families in the course of your campaigns. They are very involved and engaged, and this recent effort, which is I think the first time since that was passed that they have had an initiative, it was really triggered by the fact that as we've been looking at mandate reduction, I think the school administrators came forward with a couple of provisions that would change their role and relieve them of some of their obligations in reporting under the current law. And so the homeschool, two of the associations, the Minnesota Homeschoolers Association and MSHE, the Minnesota Association of Christian Home Educators, both have met and have worked through the bill to determine what things might change that would actually give some relief both to homeschoolers and to superintendents. They have not only done that in preparing a bill, but Mr. Tuma has also, I think, covered all of the bases in meeting with the administrators, with the school board association, with the county attorneys group. There's a few others in that list. The Department of Health, the Department of Education, and to work out and determine that these provisions would be acceptable. And so I do want to note that I would like to move a delete all amendment that I think you have before you. The A3.
Senator Olson, as quick as we get a quorum, we'll do that. I think the A3 amendment has been handed out.
And I believe the Senate counsel, Darren, has also prepared a summary that's on your desk as well that describes each of the units. But if you would like me to have, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Tuma to just review the specific provisions in the bill, if that is okay.
Okay, Senator Olson, we do have a quorum.
Okay.
So Senator Olson moves the A3 amendment, and this is a delete all amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Fuerte.
With your permission, maybe it would be helpful for me to summarize quickly the A3 amendment. The summary that was handed out in the packet today is the summary of the original bill. It's not a summary of the delete everything, and there are some additions and some subtractions.
Okay.
Well, maybe I think we could do that in the presentation of the amendment, if you don't object.
Sure. Will Mr. Tuma, do you want to go through the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I can walk through it real quickly.
And point out which...
And identify some of the changes. The first section of the original bill has been deleted. That was a provision that we're trying to clarify some of the beginning of what we call kiddie truancy. We have patiently run that through the county attorney system, and they at this time don't want to proceed with it. So that section from the original bill is gone. So anybody concerned about that, we're not addressing that. Section 1 of the delete everything amendment is where I'll start. That's on 1.5 of the delete everything, the A3 amendment. And that is dealing with the assessment of students. Our belief that we should still do assessments, and it has a critical factor. One of the goals we're trying to create here is a cooperative relationship. What we hear from our superintendents is that they want to have not a policing relationship with us homeschoolers, they want to have a cooperative relationship. And so we changed the assessment provisions so that it creates that. You will note in the next section that those assessments would be made available to the school districts upon the students matriculating back into the public schools if they want to get a diploma for the purpose of appropriate placement. And so we try to establish a cooperative relationship between the homeschoolers and the public schools. Section 2 is kind of the heart of the actual paperwork reduction of the bill. That is at 1.23, Mr. Chairman. We have to report every piece of information we essentially report right now under this reporting requirement, except for the report cards that we used to report if you did not have a bachelor's degree or the calendar. And I know calendars are a big deal for you folks. I think you're having a big fight over your public school calendar. Calendars for homeschooling was kind of a joke. I don't know, Athene, how did you calendar that 1 month you did an immersion with your daughter in New Mexico, where her daughter's learning Spanish? We just don't know how to deal with these calendars. We know it's important for public schools. In 1987, when they wanted to have this requirement that we have a calendar, Mr. Chair, that made sense to us.
Mr. Tuma, you mean you start before Labor Day?
Mr. Chair, our school, the Heath Creek Academy, starts after Labor Day.
Okay.
Mr. Tuma. Mr. Chair, if I could just add, I'm Athene Johnson, first of all. I'm here in my capacity as a homeschool mom, but also as a member of the Minnesota Homeschoolers Alliance. And with respect to the calendar, there's no day when my daughter does not receive instruction. That's the reality of almost every homeschool family that I know. So if that helps to alleviate concerns about the calendar, every day is a learning day for us.
But outside of the calendar, Mr. Chairman, again, I don't know if I stated my name for the record, John Tuma with the Minnesota Association of Christian Home Educators, MASHE. The additional changes we make here, everything else is reported the same. Simply, we only report, though, one time. When the student starts their homeschooling, we'll let the district know we're there. If we move, we're required to let them know, and then new district we move into, they would get all the information that we received in the past. You will note under subdivision 2, starting at page 2.8, this is the part where the availability of documents, homeschool families still keep all their curriculum, all their test scores, everything. We're going to make those available to the public school when that student would go back into the public school for placement purposes of that child. And so we want to be able to work with the districts. This was a section that the School Board Association and the superintendents asked for. So that's very clear in statute. We think it's existing law, but we're making it very clear. If you want to get a public school diploma, you need to make sure that you give them your documentation so they can appropriately put you in the grade that you're supposed to be in. And so we're trying to work again cooperatively with our school districts. And then subdivision 4 of this is the change that is in Senator Scogin's bill. And that is the provision limiting the amount of reporting the superintendents do. They just basically have to make sure they get the number of non-public ed school students to the Department of Education as opposed to doing a whole bunch of additional reporting, and we also give them an extra month to do that. Mr. Chairman, Section 3, 4, and 5 of the bill are kind of the meat of the change of our relationship. Superintendents really wanted to get out of the role of being the prosecutor. They wanted to get to the business of doing what they are constitutionally obligated to do, and that is to provide you with a very efficient and equitable public school system. And they really, it becomes kind of a topsy-turvy thing when they're asked to be kind of the prosecutor. Right now, the superintendent is the one that would actually submit a letter to the parent and then have to bring the matter to the Department of Education for a mediation. And often they feel like they're in the role of having to actually prosecute in front of the Department of Education. And so what we do is change that relationship. So if there is a complaint that the superintendent has, he would submit that to your county prosecutor. And the county prosecutor would send a letter to the family saying you have 15 days to rectify that. Otherwise, it automatically goes to the Department of Education for a mediation. This is a mediation they already do. And almost every one of the disputes that ever has happened in homeschooling that I've ever seen is resolved at this mediation level. There's only one reported case under this statute, and that was a family back in the early 90s that was challenging the constitutionality of our law that Senator Olson did such a good job on. It was found to be constitutional. There really is no disputes that go beyond this, to my knowledge. They're resolved at the Department of Education. They do this already. They do a fine job. But what you'll see is that the superintendent no longer has to feel like they have to go into this as the prosecutor to the Department of Education. The mediators will take care of the problems, and every one of the problems that have ever been involved in reporting have been taken care of here. And because we're simplifying the statutes and clarifying it, I believe that these mediations will go down significantly. They don't happen very often, but they will, frankly, I think, just disappear. Section 6, Mr. Chairman,
Stop you for just a second? In Subdivision 3, we're talking about the notice to parents. So the county attorney is the one that would do it now, right, instead of the superintendent. But then when in the last sentence on 3.5 and 3.6, where it says the notification must include the specific alleged violations, two things. One is the notification, which that's coming from the county attorney. Why would you want to not have, or why did you delete the written?
Mr. Chair, because we assumed it would be written.
It's redundant. It's hit up above. Mr. Chair, I think it's Senator the person Olson. Who is providing instruction and the parent in writing, so the county attorney has to make that in writing. It is just it's just a repetition.
All right. So
it still would be in writing, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Olson and Mr. Tuma. Not knowing very much about how this works, how does the county attorney become aware that there's a violation going on?
No different than he becomes aware of any other violation of the law. Either it's going to be from a truancy officer if your school district still has them. Most of them gone away from that. But some still do, particularly in the metropolitan areas. He would hear it from the superintendent, just sending a letter saying we have a family that we believe is not reporting appropriately. And that would give the basis for the letter from this, the superintendent. Again, we're trying to just create that buffer zone so that superintendent doesn't feel like he has to be the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. And so we're just trying to recognize that they have a job to do. We want a cooperative relationship. But if there is, for example, one recalcitrant family out there, and most of our families are very diligent about reporting. They're very careful. They want to do what's right. I think in most cases they probably provide more information than the school district really cares to have. And so if there is one out there, it just kind of insulates him from that role of feeling like he has to prosecute. It'd be no different if your neighbor was violating the zoning laws and you got irritated with them. You would contact an official over at the county to take care of it. It's, mm-hmm. You could also contact the social services, those type of people to investigate if you wanted to. This is only really dealing with the reporting statute. If there's something else going on as far as child abuse and that, that's the normal process that you would have. But here, just simply the reporting stuff, superintendent could easily just send a letter to the county attorney saying there's a violation here. I have run this language by the County Attorneys Association, and they're fine with it. Section 6, Mr. Chairman, is immunization changes. We actually, under the old law, had to report every year our immunization records, and I didn't learn until I finally talked with the Minnesota Department of Health that they really only want to get them from us twice, once when our children start school and then when they have their normal regimen of boosters at age seventh grade. And so they were happy to tell us, sure, we'll gladly reduce your paperwork because we don't need this information. And so this statute says that the families have to report their immunization reports when they first report and when the child reaches the equivalent of seventh grade. Mr. Chair, Section 7 and 8 is the money savers for the state. Right now you have a non-public pupil program that was started years ago. Because the definition of homeschooling in your statutes means that we're essentially a private school akin to St. Teresa's Catholic School, we can qualify for non-public pupil aid, about $77 for books. This program really was designed for St. Teresa's Catholic School, not for homeschoolers. And what has happened is, of course, we're pretty innovative, some of our families. Not everyone uses this. Probably only a minority of the homeschooling families use this program because right now you have a very generous tax credit and deduction system that most of our families use. But it's out there, and some people do take advantage of it. The reality, though, is it is the most cumbersome and difficult bit of bureaucratic paperwork that our school districts do as they relate to homeschoolers. Not to St. Teresa's Catholic. St. Teresa's Catholic actually works very good. And just to really quickly describe what happens, if St. Teresa's Catholic school has 100 kids and they want to get the non-public pupil aid for their students, they send in one report for those 100 kids. And the school district then, under the way the law is drafted, actually has to purchase the books because you have a constitutional provision. Our state constitution makes it illegal for you to support non-sectarian schools.
Sectarian schools.
Thank you. And so the district then purchased the books. They actually own them, and when St. Teresa's is done with them, they're supposed to give them back. It works very good on a large scale when you're talking about St. Teresa's Catholic School because it works good. They have one administrator talking to another, and they're handing 100 kids. Now let's overlay that over 100 homeschool families in your district. They each send in 100 different reports, guess what, asking for 100 different books, and it becomes a very difficult system for that public school then to try to purchase 100 different books from 100 different places. And it becomes very, very, very difficult for them to administer. And we know that, and we think if we were going to be really honest about bringing you a homeschool mandate reduction bill, it would be disingenuous for us not to include this. Now, is it a sacrifice for our homeschool families? Yes, some families are going to be losing that, but I don't think it's as big as some people think it is because they do have the education tax credit deductions. This is one of the ones that we've had a lot of debate, and I know Athene can point out their position. You know, we were going to work from Mache's standpoint trying to help homeschool families that are in need so that they have opportunities to educate, but rest assured, even after passage of this section, Minnesota will have one of the most generous systems for families purchasing educational stuff. So, you know, don't feel like you're leaving the homeschoolers out in the cold. Our tax credit and deduction system is very good. Athena, you probably want to mention, you know, your position, so I'm not talking for you.
Yeah.
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair. And members, the Minnesota Homeschoolers Alliance has, as Mr. Tuma said, had a great deal of discussion on this point, and my sense is that within MHA, it, as with Mache, is a very small percentage of our membership that uses this, but the percentage that do use it, they're very passionate about this bit of money. And the concern within MHA is that right now, particularly with the economy struggling, it will negatively impact those families. And so MHA's official stance on the bill is a mixed stance. MHA, of course, supports the mandate reductions, but is somewhat concerned that this might negatively impact some of our families. On a personal level, I can tell you that I agree with Mr. Tuma. I think that the impact that this will have is being overstated within the homeschool community, and that people are going to be just fine, and that we as a community will step up and help our members to make sure that this is not going to really harm them in the long run.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, the last few sections, a lot of verbiage to do two very simple things. Sections 9, 10, and 11 are changes that we have asked to change the way that we obtain a correspondence course from the Department of Public Safety with regards to driver's education. Now, I know this is a big hot-button issue, but I want to let everybody know we're not changing anything very significantly here, I think actually making it better. Right now, we have to ask the superintendent for a letter to prove that we're homeschooling. So what we would like to do, instead of having to bother the superintendent to check his records to see if we're homeschooling, simply to verify with the Department of Public Safety we are homeschool families, sign an affidavit, and then we also clarify the law under the changes in the amendment that if we lie on that affidavit, we are subject to losing our license. The child would lose their license, and we would be possibly subject to a crime. We think basically this is the law right now, but we're clarifying that. And then we also allow the Department of Public Safety to contact the school district just to verify that, in fact, we are homeschooling our children. So what it simply is doing is saving the superintendent the hassle of having to draft a letter to us so that we can ship it off to clog the paperwork of the Department of Public Safety. And we think in the end this will be simplifying the system, but it will not create any open doors for people abusing the one privilege we have to teach correspondence courses to our kids for driver's ed. I'm doing that right now with my 15-year-old son. Again, this is only the classroom portion, the 30 hours of classroom. I still have to have my son sign up with Senator Dahl and do the driver's ed down in Northfield when it comes time to do the 6 hours of behind the wheel. And so that hasn't
Senator
changed.
Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit surprised to hear that you can do the 30 hours in a correspondence way. And I probably should have been aware of that. We heard a bill in transportation 2 years in a row that says they could do driver's ed online, our students, and we actually voted that down for, I think, pretty sound reasons. And so now it seems like the children in our homeschools have an option that regular children don't have. Could you address that?
Yeah, thank you, Senator.
Mr.
Chairman, you know, I think the reason you voted that down in part, and I've seen those because we kind of do support the online one, and that's not going to come in here by any means. I may assure you of that. Is that you don't really know whether the child is actually taking the course. And in part, that's the concern that you have. And really, that is short-circuited with the homeschool families. We're the ones actually having to do the training, spending the time with our children to do that 30 hours of training physically one-on-one with them. So we're actually providing them a little bit more enhanced one-on-one, almost special ed style driver's education. And it's a privilege that we have. It was a thrill. I was driving with my son up north for an in-district meeting for my other client. In every town, every little town we went through on the way up to Bemidji, he had to name every single sign. That's the section that we were doing at that time. And so, what's that sign, Cal? What's that sign? And so it's an opportunity where we're interacting with our families, and you're kind of assured that that is actually happening. Where the online courses, the big concern that I think I've heard is that we really don't know whether that student will actually be doing that coursework. And so,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to ask Mr. Tuma, maybe you should describe a little bit more what the correspondence is. It's kind of the public safety's curriculum, essentially, or can you just give a little bit comfort to the committee that this is a legitimate resource that is actually used by the parents in educating their children?
Right. We, Mr. Chair, we have to, Mr. Chair and senators, we have to actually sit down and do a log of all the time that we spend with our kids. We can only use the correspondence courses that are approved by the Department of Public Safety. And so, and it requires us to specifically log all the time that we spent with them on the education of our kids in that classroom portion of it. And so, again, there's only a certain set of curriculum they'll allow us to use. I think it's probably about a dozen different ones that we can pick from. And they're all actual correspondence. And then we have to actually send them into the correspondence school then to approve our actual coursework that we did. And so really, there's probably more oversight over what we do with our homeschool children than would exist for most other children.
Thank you.
And the last change, Mr. Chairman, is a provision where superintendents right now are required to give a certificate of employment if a student is working during school hours, if their age is 14 to 15. And this simply changes. It says that the non-public school can certify that the child is able to work during those hours. It's simply there to protect the employer against any violations of the law. So St. Teresa's Catholic School could still send in that certificate instead of bothering the superintendent for that certificate. And I, as a parent who is in charge of the education of my children, can provide that certificate. And if you look at the language in that statute, the parents still have to consent to it. And so it still has that protection for the employer, which we're trying to create. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I don't want anybody to panic that we're reducing regulation here to a very low standing. Minnesota would still be probably a medium regulation state compared to other homeschool state regulations across the country. Right now, we're considered a very high regulation state. Recent studies have shown that state regulations have absolutely no bearing whatsoever on the measure of homeschool academic achievement. There's recent studies that show that, so you're not going to be setting homeschoolers out running wild through your school districts or through your communities. You won't see 15 passenger vans mooning people as they drive down your main streets, okay? They will be still be doing their work very diligently and very carefully. They care about what they do. One of the things I can point out to you is that our mothers are the best regulation that you have. There is an old adage in camping, never get between a mother bear and her cubs. Okay, that's true for homeschooling. These mothers are mother bears, and they love the time they can spend with their cubs. And if you get in between them, and I happen to do that once in the way the Biffy the Boundary Waters, and I never ran so fast in my life, okay, you never get between these moms and their bears. And if they see people that are abusing homeschooling, they're not afraid to turn people in. In most cases where I've seen where people, bad people, do bad things, okay, they do it from being a police officer to a child care stuff. But with homeschoolers, they're your regulation front. They love this, and they don't want anybody abusing that. And they also love it so much that they really cooperate together. We have a very vibrant support group movement out there of mothers working with mothers to help them become better at what they do. In a month, we'll have a conference just down the street here at the St. Paul Civic Center. Back in 87, when we first started, it was in the basement of a Lutheran church, okay? We will have nearly 5,000 people gathering to see over 250 curriculum providers from preschool to college, okay, talking to us about it. Not only is it so good that your own public Department of Education allows those classes to be used as part of their continuing legal public education credits. That's the kind of stuff that our homeschoolers are doing it. Regulation is not going to make us better, okay? We're going to continue to take care of ourselves, and we've proved that, I think, that since 1987. The world is different, and we want to have a cooperative relationship with our school district. Senator Scogin in Fergus Falls. Fergus Falls has a program right now where the public school actually opens up their facility to the homeschool co-op so that they can take science classes, not on a shared time basis, simply just opening up and creating a positive working relationship with those families. That's the kind of things that are happening out there, and we want to continue that in a way that reduces the paperwork for you and for those homeschool mom bears who are out there doing their job. And with that, I'll pass it on. I don't know if Mrs. Johnson has anything more to say, but...
No, I fully agree with what he said. And I want to, I guess the one thing that I would point out, I'm not sure how familiar you are with homeschooling, but there are, it's a very diverse community. And I guess when I first came into our homeschool journey, I didn't really understand what it was. And I just want to impress upon you that people homeschool for a variety of reasons. There are stereotypes out there, which I'm pleased to say I've learned are completely off base. And if anyone has any questions about that, or you know, what the community is really like, if you have any concerns about homeschooling or what it means, what it is on a day-to-day basis, I would be very happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have seen firsthand that homeschooling can be a real benefit to the entire community. In Hopkins, the kids who are homeschooled are a vibrant part of our extracurricular activities, and they participate in our choirs, and in fact our Hopkins basketball team, which as people might know has won state several times, generally has homeschoolers who are on that team, and so they are definitely respected as a part of our community. So I know that you are doing a great job out there. And I have a question with regard to test scores. Do you have any data about how your students on average are scoring on the ACTs or the SATs, and the percentage of students who go to four-year colleges or technical colleges and graduate?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I don't have them right at hand, but every one of the statistics that we've seen show that our students are performing at or above even the best of the private schools in the communities. I think the one-on-one aspect of that has been very successful. Usually when we started, a lot of times people wouldn't accept our transcripts. Back in the 80s, they would, you know, wouldn't know who we are, and that has totally changed. You have major universities like Stanford. It actually gives you extra points on your application process if you were homeschooled, because they've seen the success. We've had valedictorians of Harvard University, and so we can, you know, the statistics are there. I can get them for you. I don't have them on me right now, but every one of the statistics have indicated that our students are doing very well on achievement tests. You know, I was, and the funny thing is, most of our parents aren't even teaching to the test. We've had two students from our board members. She's a public school teacher. She's got a master's degree in special education. She homeschooled her kids and really never paid much attention to the ACT test. And her two daughters went, and one's got a perfect score, and one was 1 point below a perfect score. And she said, we never even thought about studying to the test. And I think that's just because of that one-on-one that you get with these students. They have a lot more chance to gain that kind of knowledge. It's not every student does great. One of the things I'm proudest of, frankly, is working with special needs kids. And our community has started by having a special needs coordinator and working with them. And we see a lot of wonderful successes there, too. And so we really, it's about community and working together, and that's why we succeed. But all the statistics indicate that our students are doing just fine.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, in Section 4, line 3.1, there's a deletion of superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, 3.10. On the A3 amendment. 3.10.
Pardon me?
Oh, 3. Okay.
Which is on page 3. The deletion of the superintendent. I think Senate Counsel has suggested that maybe that should be reinstated. Or either the county attorney, I'm not sure. The county attorney is the one before the paragraph before section or subdivision 3, in the if you read that, it doesn't have a
submitter,
right?
It would be the county attorney in that situation. That's the goal, okay, to kind of take the superintendent out of that role of feeling like they're prosecuting at the department.
So, Senator Olson, you move that that the county attorney be Okay, maybe Mr.
Mr. Chairman, I think it needs a little bit more revision to put that put a person back in there.
Senator Council.
Mr. Chair, members, I would suggest that on page 3, line 10, after submitted, insert by the county attorney.
Okay.
Good catch, Council. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Olson moves on line 3.10, after submitted, insert by the county attorney. Okay, any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign.
Mr. Chair,
motion
there's one other technical amendment that needs to be made. I have Deb Carlson from the Department of Public Safety. The language is pretty close to our discussions, but there's a couple changes I think she wants to have to make sure it meets their concerns, too.
Is she here? Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Deb Carlson, and I'm the exam program manager with the Department of Public Safety Driver and Vehicle Services. And my work unit works very closely with the approval of driver education programs in addition to the homeschooling part. And what we are looking at, and we worked very closely with Mr. Tuma on this, and we really appreciate that. And one concern that we had with this was had to do with our current process. We were relying on that communication from the superintendent's office of verification that the individual is truly a homeschool student. And so what we would like to hopefully see put into this draft language would be inserting under 6.21, which is in Section 9, by the way, we'd like to have the ability that we can require that superintendent's office to provide us the verification if we should ask. So the phrase that we're looking to add there would be, and the superintendent shall provide such verification.
Mr. Chairman,
hey, Senator Olson,
I would move that
On 6.21, before the period, insert, and the superintendent shall provide such verification.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, what did you would you repeat what you said?
Yes. On line 6.21, before the period, insert, and the superintendent shall provide such verification.
Mr. Chairman, if we don't want Senator Frederickson to get aroused, he doesn't like the word such. So if you would take that out and put that, I think.
Okay.
We'll deprive him of that.
We'll see if he finds it, huh?
Yeah.
No. Ms. McQuaid?
A clarification that, Mr. Chair, this would read upon the request of the verification from the commissioner that the superintendent shall provide the verification, or would you like it that the superintendent should just provide the verification without the request?
Ms. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, actually what we just would like a little bit of teeth in it, that we're not asking them to have to provide us anything anymore. We just have the concern that, say, we get a document that we question, that we could then approach the superintendent's office and that they would be hopefully required to provide us with the information we're looking for.
Mr. Chairman, I think it is a clarity. You know, this says you can ask, but he or she doesn't have to answer. And I think this just says if that information is requested, it must be provided to them.
Okay. And so the language, and the superintendent shall provide that verification. On that, Senator Salzman?
Yes. So just to follow up, Mr. Chair, possibly because I sit on the Transportation Committee, so we deal with these issues, so I just want to clarify that the superintendent would have been notified when this child was in seventh grade. And so 3 years later, if the commissioner requests, I guess I would perhaps ask that the superintendent would then note the date of when that last reporting was done. Because I think when we're talking, I think that this is when we talked about driver's ed. We've spent a lot of time on that in our transportation committee with our teenage drivers. And I have all I don't. It's not that I don't trust that these forms are being done, but if a superintendent is asked to verify, that's based on information sent in 3 or 4 years earlier. I think that should be noted so that if the public safety department has a question for some reason, that information is 3 or 4 years old.
Mr. Chairman,
is that a concern?
The home education parent is making this request of the commissioner of public safety. And the public safety, if there's some reason that they want to be sure, they want to check back with the superintendent whether this is a matter of record that this person has identified that they're homeschooling. Seventh grade is an issue with immunization. It's when they start homeschooling, they must provide that information. And if they have either ceased or moved away or whatever, they have an obligation to report that too. The things that we've been talking about relative to the county attorney, that can get them into trouble if they haven't maintained that accurately. That's the grounds for this fact-finding and relationship with the county attorney is actually the reporting part of it. So I think what the Commissioner of Public Safety is saying, we want to be able to check with the superintendent to see if this if are on record as being homeschooling.
And Mr. Chair, I think to your specific question, there will be a roster of those families. If you see the way the reporting requirement is that the district will continue to report the number of non-public school students they have in their district, not just when they report at the first start. So we anticipate those districts will be keeping probably an Excel spreadsheet of the families that they are watching. They'll have the date of birth. They'll have all that information so they'll know when the student falls off of their obligation to watch after they turn 18. All that information. And so we anticipate that the school districts will still have records. They just won't keep getting paperwork over and over and over again. They'll have a roster that they need to check. If that roster is wrong, that's my fault for not following up with my parents, and then I'm not doing what I need to do in order to get that driver's education provision. So that still falls on the parent to follow through and make sure that those records are all accurate. And so the districts will have that information.
Okay, on Senator Olson's motion, everybody understand that? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. I think that does it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just make a few more comments. There was some discussion about the homeschool and their relationships. You know, over the years, there have been some tenuous relationships between homeschoolers and school districts and superintendents. But I think that has changed a great deal over the years. And just a couple little incidents. I was in a setting and I heard two women talking to one another, and they happened to be from the school district that I live in. And one of them said, "I got a letter from the superintendent inviting us to come to the school district, and if there were any courses or programs that they would like to, that we can't provide, that we would like to take advantage of, that we would be welcome." She almost fell off the Christmas tree. It was so surprising because usually they've sensed that they're adversaries, and so I've appreciated that in our my own home district, and they said, yeah, you know, we recognize these people vote in our referendums too. And also, if they do come, if they aren't able to provide a course and want to take advantage of the school, the school will get paid for that portion of time that they are taking a regular academic course. And we do have in place, you know, their inclusion in statute, their inclusion in extracurricular activities, and many of them do take advantage of that as well. And I had another superintendent come and tell me, he said, you know, I know you've worked with homeschoolers, and he said, I just want you to know that I was rather adversarial, but he said, I want you to know that I've changed my mind. And so I think that there's some healthy growth in this spirit of cooperation and the recognition that it's in the interest of our public schools also to to reach out and so that people know that they are welcome when they have that need, and yet they are free to make the choice they feel is in the best interest of their children. So I think this bill goes a pretty good step along that way to open those doors by relieving some of the unnecessary paper shifting and stuff that is has to go on both sides. And I believe, I don't know if there's any, if Mr. Kite or others are here, but that would want to pass on their word of reaction to the bill. But it has, Mr. Tuma has given some pretty hard work in covering the bases to be sure that they haven't done something that is going to make life difficult and turn the relationship negative rather than positive, because we want it to be a positive one.
Thank you, Senator Olson. And I will ask if there's anyone else that wants to testify on this. But for members, and for Senator Olson, the motion would be that this would be recommended to be passed and then re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay.
And so, members, as it leaves the Education Committee, Policy Committee, it'll go to Finance and then back to us, which is kind of a little bit of a circular motion, but then Finance will deal with it and then send it to the floor. So, is there anyone else that would like to testify on this? Otherwise, we'll move on. Senator Wiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I assume Senator Murphy, through committee participation here, will be aware of it. I had a question of Senator Olson or Mr. Tuma. I believe there's about 5,800 homeschoolers now in the state. Or could you give me what that number is, and is it continuing to increase or stabilized?
Good
Mr.
question.
Tuma?
Mr. Chair and Senator Chair Wiger, too. The change has been very flat lately. We have not seen much growth, and it's more in the neighborhood of 17,000 homeschoolers. So it probably... We've seen, I think, with a lot of the additions of different charter schools and online schooling, the number of homeschoolers since probably 2002 have been relatively stable at about 1 or 2% of the school population, about 17,000, if I remember the last statistics.
Mr. Chair, I think the 17,000 is the number of students that are homeschooled. Your number may be referring to families, because there are multiple children often in one of these.
Okay, Senator Olson, do you want to take the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that the committee recommends NFIL 846 to pass and be referred to as amended and be referred to the full Finance Committee.
Okay, on Senator Olson's motion, any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson and
thank
Mr.
You very
Tuma
much.
And Ms. Carlson. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next, we have Senator Scogin. I'm sorry. The committee, the Education Policy Committee will adjourn. And
what are we now?
Well, we switch tapes.
Oh, nice.